to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Cheryl and I look forward to this so much every week.
Yes, we do.
Because it's like a treasure hunt.
It is.
We find these women, every woman is a woman worth knowing.
Absolutely.
But when we find these women in history who are ordinary and yet they trusted our extraordinary God, boy, is that motivating or what?
It is so motivating and so inspiring. And today I have for you someone I had never known before, but I told you before, when I was in England, there are these little bookstores called Book Aid, which take in used books.
Yep.
And just, it's a treasure trove for me. Well, for us readers, you just can go crazy. And I especially love old books. But they've got these, they're a little more than a pamphlet. And they're put out by Eagle Books and by Living Stone Publishing, which is no longer
Yes,
happening.
I remember them back in the day.
Back in the day. But this is about a woman named Mary Bird. And the book is called She Went Alone.
Ooh.
She Went Alone. So that's the beginning. And so Once I get one of those books, I always want more information. So from there, I'll usually go to the internet. I'll Google. I'll see what other sources there are. Sometimes I'm able to download a book, which is fantastic.
Yes.
So she's also another lady named Jeannie Chappell. I wasn't able to get her book because it was too expensive, but she also has a book on Mary Bird, but it was like, ah!
Yes, there are some books we found that are in the $1,000 category.
Oh my goodness. This was only $200, but it's like, it's only podcasts. I already have enough. So if you want that $200 book, I'll tell you, it's out there. So Mary was born in 1859 to a very clerical family. I was searching for what's the right word. It's because she had bishops in her family tree. Her dad himself was, a member of the clergy. He was a parson, as we used to say, he was a parson. And he had a parsonage. He had a little parish that he taught on in a place called Castle Eden in England. Doesn't that make you want to visit?
Charming. Yes,
I know.
Please.
I love that. So on her father's side, she was distantly related to, and you're going to like this, William Wilberforce.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
She was also on her father's side related to the Archbishop of Canterbury, John Bird Sumner, 1780 to 1874, and also to the Bishop of Winchester. And on her father's side, again, I don't know, her poor mom. There was just like no one, right?
Many parsonages.
Right. Yes. And on her father's side, her father had a cousin who I can't wait to talk about in one of the coming weeks, named Isabella Bird Bishop.
Yes, and I have heard of Isabella Bird.
Amazing.
Yes,
I just started.
Yes,
I ordered a book. Her book was a little less expensive to read. So I'm all set to read Isabella's story. But she was an explorer.
Adventurer.
Yes.
Extraordinaire.
Yes.
Fearless.
And, I mean, it's incredible because I've read a little bit about her already and it was like, what? Where have you been all my life? And so the last fun fact is that Mary's grandfather was the head of the revenue department of, here we go, Northwest Provinces of India.
Oh.
So, obviously this is a family
connection.
That's used to travel and she grew up hearing about these distant lands and the people of distant lands. And again, her father's a parish preacher. So when Mary was 5 years old, these missionaries came from Africa and they were at her father's house. They'd spoken that day and they were talking about the need of the little children in Africa.
Mm.
And she was only five, and her heart began to melt for those children. And then the missionary pointedly looked at her and said, would you like to go and tell them one day?
Really?
And she said, yes. And she knew in her heart that that was a pledge she made to the Lord at five. At five.
It immediately puts in mind Corrie ten Boom, who said she gave her life to Jesus at five and never doubted, never turned back, like the Lord specifically spoke to her.
I love that. And that's not impossible. I think sometimes we look at our children and we think, someday.
Right.
Someday. But there is the possibility, especially for you grandmas and you young mothers, look at that child, that baby, that two-year-old with absolute potential.
Yes.
Because they could receive Jesus and pledge themselves to the Lord's service as young as five.
And don't you wonder if they even see or understand that childlike faith that's so simple to them?
Right. It's beautiful. I mean, God's real, and yeah. I owe him everything. So Mary was actually the fifth child. She had four siblings above her and one sibling below her. And Mary was so petite that all of her siblings and her mom and dad, they all called her Tiny. So she grew up with the name Tiny, and she was always, always petite. So after she pledged herself to the Lord for the next 26 years, Mary helped in her father's parish. She worked among the children in the parish, teaching the children, and she regularly met with and ministered to the factory girls in the town.
Oh, nice.
And I find that's interesting because both Mary Slessor and Amy Carmichael had ministries to the factory girls, which were called the Shawlies in those days because they couldn't afford a coat, so they would wear their shawls.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And so she also had a similar ministry. And she felt like she couldn't leave as long as her father was alive and his parish was in need. And I think in some ways he kind of kept her from going to the mission field. But he died in 1886 when she was 29, and she started making steps to enter into the mission field. Well, while she's deliberating and she feels like, you know, the Lord has called her, mm-hmm. she doesn't know where she's going to go, this handsome, wonderful, wealthy man enters her life, and he is a devoted Christian, and he absolutely adores her. And he asks her to marry him. And she cared so deeply for this young man, but felt like she had pledged to the Lord that she would go into the mission mm-hmm. field wherever he called her. And so one of her friends wrote this: she refused the offer of marriage from one for whom she had the greatest affection, as she had already offered to go abroad and was convinced that her life work lay in some foreign land, then unknown to her, and that a life of comparative ease in England was not for her.
Wow.
I mean, how sacrificial, but how like future seen, you know, I forgot.
Yes.
Foreknowledge.
Yeah.
Of understanding, I might love him, I might be really happy, but at some point I'm going to be frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that to him. And I am called by God, and I've got to follow that call, this restlessness that I've got to seek first the Lord.
Yeah.
Even though she really cared for this man. Now, in 1891, she was accepted to serve in Persia. So she applied to a mission board, actually the Church Missionary Society, and they said, you know, we're looking for a woman to go to Persia. So as yet, they had sent women with their husbands, but they had never sent a single, you know, woman who was unattached on her own to Persia. By this time, I believe it was CIM, Christian Missionary, was a Christian missionary in China with Hudson Taylor. They were one of the first to begin to conscript single women and found that they were so effective on the mission field. And perhaps the Church Missionary Society heard of that, but up to this point, it was pretty novel for a woman to go unattached.
Yes.
Especially yes. to a country like Persia that is so chauvinistic.
Right. And it wasn't as if, excuse me, the same as India, where there's all the established communities that are very British.
Right.
So that she could just kind of,
right.
you know, settle into one of those and go out from there. But she's going to be on her own.
She's going to be on her own. So in 1891, she was accepted to serve in Persia to pioneer women's work. She then had to enroll in what was called the Willows, and it was a missionary training college for women in Stoke Newington. Now, Mary struggled at the Willows, especially the first few months, and it was only a year long. So she struggled. She did not like all the demands. she didn't like the austerity and she didn't like the discipline. And she thought, how am I going to do this? I'm 32 years old and I'm really chafing against all these rules and all these regulations and all these deprivations and sacrifices. How am I ever going to serve on the mission field? She was required to wear the plainest clothes, a bonnet, and live by the school's clock. And she really resented it. Not only that, the college had what they called spiritual work, which was mainly evangelism. And she found it so hard. It was different with the Shawleys when they were gathering to her and she could talk to them. And, you know, it just flowed so naturally. She kind of taught Bible studies. But this, to just go up to people and say, hello, do you know Jesus? And that's what the school expected her to do, or to, you know, take on more of the style of Salvation Army to kind of proclaim it. And this was so hard for her. And she did not have a problem meeting the physical need or serving others in any way. I mean, she loved to work with her hands. She loved to do whatever, whether it was making a meal or doing dishes or cleaning or anything. She was like, put me on it. But when it came to, all right, today we're going to evangelize, she's like, oh, no. Oh, no. It was so hard for her. And she really prayed about it. And she said she felt so humbled that she was willing to serve the Lord in any other way but evangelism. Like, Lord, anything else. But don't make me have to just, you know, share the gospel with somebody. Can you imagine? So she wrote.
Well, at least in that method. And what's so interesting is you think about women that we've talked about in the past. Lillian Trasher comes to mind and Josephine Butler. And anytime these women clearly called by God, and then they go through a sort of training where they're trying to be conformed to whatever that style is.
Right. Or method,
they chafe against it.
Yes.
And yet when they break out, then God just opens all these doors. May there be hope for those women who feel like, what's wrong with me?
Yes.
I can't get along with this program.
Well, Helen Rosevear, who was this incredible doctor to the Congo, struggled in the missionary training college. In fact, they looked out the window and they thought, will she ever make it? Because she just hung all these clothes on a line and the wind blew. And apparently she hadn't put them on tight enough. And all these sheets and everything blew in the mud. And they were watching her going, oh, no, Helen, she might be a doctor, but, you know, look at this.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden, Helen then plopped down in the mud and just started laughing. And they looked at each other and they said, oh, she's perfect for the mission field. It's one of my favorite Helen Rosevear stories.
She can adapt.
She can adapt. Well, here's our friend, Mary Rebecca Bird. And she wrote in her journal that she was not content to remain in the forced labor party, grudgingly, of necessity, taking part. She said, Lord, I don't like this in me. Mm. I don't like this resistance. I don't want to feel like I'm being forced against my will. I want you to work on my heart. She felt that all her service was useless unless she could offer herself wholeheartedly, absolutely willingly. So she prayed and she prayed and she prayed and nothing seemed to happen. And she felt as it was necessary to confess this to the principal at the Willows College. She said, I have to confess. I have to tell him everything. I'm maybe not suited for the mission field with all of this struggle going on in me. Well, when she told the principal, he looked at her and he said, it's all right. He said, the best intentioned glowworm must rely on a force outside itself for the kindling of its little spark.
I like him, whoever that director was.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, that ministered to me so much.
Yes.
In other words, you can't do this without the Spirit.
No.
And the Spirit will give it to you when it's necessary. So then she wrote in her journal, I know now what I never knew before, that spiritual work can be done only in the power of the Spirit of God.
Preach it.
Isn't
Mary.
That so
yes,
good?
Yes. Like, she got it.
That really was the lesson, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the lesson was you can't witness just because someone tells you to witness.
Exactly.
You have to have the Spirit of the Lord softening the ground, preparing the soil, preparing the heart, and then speaking through you. I think we've all had that experience of, you know, those awkward times when we feel it incumbent on us versus those times when the Spirit just overwhelms and you find yourself just witnessing. You're like, oh, I'm sharing Jesus. This is so good, and I can keep doing this.
I remember in high school, we had this let's go out outreach on the beach. There we were. And the tracks that I had were in Spanish, so I was supposed to look for people who were. And I had a little high school Spanish, so I could maybe pronounce it slightly accurately. But someone pointed out to me afterwards that I had been sitting there with a girl reading through the whole tract of the four spiritual laws, including I'm reading the copyright information and the where it was printed. And I didn't know what it said. I just thought I could pronounce it accurately. But so I don't know the result of that. But yeah, it's not a one size fits all. It's not a method.
No method.
Really not by might or by power, but by God's Spirit.
Right. And He leads us.
Yeah.
And sometimes people aren't ready, but He knows where the harvest is and where it's white. So that's what she learned, which is, I think, an essential lesson for every Christian, but especially if you're going into the mission field, and especially if you're planning on going to Persia, which is today, which is Iran. So the Christian missionary had been established in Iran. That's when they had their base in 1869. So Mary was roughly 10 when the first missionaries went to Iran or to Persia. And though married women had served alongside their husbands, as I had said before, Mary was the first single woman to serve alone. So she arrived with the Miss Stubbs in 1891 in Julfa, Iran. And though Miss Stubbs, obviously by her name, is single, she was called there to teach and to start a school. So it was a little different than what Mary was called to do, because Mary was to serve as a medical missionary.
Oh.
So her training that she received for this was just those few months at the Willows.
Oh, dear. Wow.
And then she had done a little bit with her father, but not much because there's not a medical background there. So she spent her first months living with Dr. and Mrs. Bruce. And they were fellow missionaries with Church Missionary Society. And Dr. Bruce began to train her in all the lapses of her education. And she would watch him and watch him dispense the medicine. And he was teaching her to look for symptoms and how to diagnose. She also would go with Mrs. Bruce, who took her to visit the Persian women in their homes. Mary was also given a Mirza, which is a language teacher. Now, her teacher did not speak any English except, here's three words, good, goodbye, and both.
Oh, dear.
Can you imagine?
Both.
Both. I don't know how many conversations
Random.
That could come in. You know, maybe she would say, should I say, you know, Mizra, or should I say both? You know? I don't even know if he knew what it meant. Also, the doctor explained what Islam was to her. And the tenets of Islam, because he said, you've got to know where they're coming
certainly.
From.
The culture.
The culture, right. So when she had her Mizra, she was actually a little piqued by him because he never came on time. He had his own set of time when he would come, and she'd be waiting and waiting. And she was so energetic, and she liked to keep a tight schedule. And so she wrote long letters back to her mother and siblings in England, describing the culture, the sights, and her activity. And she often drew pictures of her surroundings and the buildings, which she included in her letters. And I've seen some of her sketches, and they were really, really, really good. And where she went, Julfa is was mainly Armenian. So it was part of... Now it would be part of, what is it? It's north of Iran now, and it's south of Georgia, south of Tbilisi. So it's part of, I always get this wrong, but it's Azerbaijan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it's part of today. And in her day, there were some Armenians and there were some other cultures. And at first she was really taken with the Kurds because they were so hospitable and so nice until she saw how they persecuted the Armenians. And then she was taken back. But the Kurds also persecuted the Muslims just as much. But she was shocked at the underlying hostility that was covered often by hospitality. One day she met a 12-year-old wife and mother who served her pears. Another day she met a woman who was veiled entirely in black, and her baby boy wore a sheep's eye on a wool cap to ward off bad luck.
Mm.
She learned to eat what they set before her when she visited and to know what their diets were and what their hospitality, their sensitivities, and their priorities and their abilities were. She learned to eat sitting cross-legged on the floor with an English bath towel for a tablecloth and being served silver trays of Turkish delight, sweetmeats, small cold boiled potatoes, pepper and salt, iced lump sugar and water, apple juice, pomegranate juice and rose water, iced lemon juice and tea. And this was the typical fare that she would receive when she visited a house. This is what mainly what they would do. This is what you gave
what is
as a token of hospitality.
Sugar?
It must have been like a candy for them or something.
So, you had me at Turkish Delight.
Oh, really? Mary made friends easily, and the children loved her even before she could converse with them. There was also heartache, and even though she loved the beauty, she really embraced the culture. She met a shoemaker, and only to find out that he was fined for beating to death an 11-year-old girl who worked for him because she did not finish making a pair of shoes in the allotted time.
Oh, dear.
Can you imagine? She wrote back to her mother, "Sin, sorrow, oppression, avarice, and injustice seem everywhere, and God's loving mercy, the gift of his Son, our Savior, and the Holy Ghost, the Comforter, are unknown." So the doctor had to leave. He was only there for, it was like his last year. And so Mary had to take over the medical practice. And she gained fame for her medical skills because they brought a little boy who had malaria to her and he was dying. And she was able to cure him and able to help his health be completely restored. And because of that little boy, she gained all this fame. And pretty soon, all these women were coming to her. Because you've got to remember, in the Muslim culture at that time, they weren't allowed to go to a male doctor.
Right.
And so they never had medical intervention.
Interesting.
They didn't have anyone helping them.
Sure.
So now here's a woman, and they're allowed to go to a woman, and they can now have diagnosis, they can have medicine, they can get help for everything that they're going through.
That's so amazing, because that would have been a specific gift that she had to bring to the people, to the women.
Exactly.
That might not have been the same if she were married, if she were a man.
That's right. That's great. Well, they were really put off at first by her unconventional methods. Now I'm talking unconventional compared to the Persian standards. She used things like soap and water and bandages and medicines that you would eat, can you believe it? And fresh air and rest.
Just crazy.
But they were used to their methods of old rags soaked in pomegranate juice. That was one of their methods. The white of an egg, gunpowder, or treating ulcers with powdered stones and glue.
Oh, my.
Or even the most famous, donkey brains. So these are some of their remedies.
Whoa.
And so they were a little put off by Mary, like, what? This will work. But pretty soon they found that it was actually working. So Mary felt totally ill-equipped to meet all the needs. Can you imagine, you know, that little training at the Willows, sure. just a few months with the doctor. And now these women are coming to her. You know, it was one when it was a one-off or just a few, but now you've got all these women coming to her. So she wrote back to England and she said, please send me medical books. They sent her 4 medical books and she studied these books constantly. We're going to talk about what her life was like in the next installment. And we'll talk about her schedule and how hard she studied these books, because you're going to find that she always kept them nearby as a reference for all the women she treated. This is Mary Bird. And next week, we'll go into part 2.
Great.
It's going to be so good.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at wwk@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.